Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
They were both wild card teams, and now they are both heading to the World Series. Starting Tuesday night, it'll be the Kansas City Royals versus the San Francisco Giants after the Giants captured their third pennant in 5 years last night. Sorry, St. Louis. But here is an amazing fact. The Giants were playing in the World Series exactly 25 years ago today against the Oakland A's at Candlestick Park in San Francisco when this happened.
At second base, so the Oakland A's take.
They were having an earthquake, a 6.9 magnitude quake. And here's how Bay Area resident Peter Lawford described it on NPR.
It went on. It's hard to judge these things right after they happen, but it felt like a couple of minutes. And toward the end, it was shaking so severely that we were all under the doorway, because that's supposed to be the safest spot in the house during an earthquake, hoping that the house was going to hold on. The house was shaking and rattling and rolling.
All told, 63 people died. The top level of a freeway pancaked, and 124 buildings were destroyed or damaged in the Marina District after the ground liquefied there. So, is San Francisco and the Bay Area better prepared for an earthquake now, a major one, than it was in 1989? Kat Snow is science editor for KQED in San Francisco, part of the Here and Now Contributors Network. Hi, Kat.
Hi.
And Patrick Odolini joins us now as well. He's the head of the San Francisco Earthquake Safety Implementation Program. He's also been called the world's first chief resilience officer. Patrick, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me back on the show.
And Kat, I know you weren't living there back then, but Patrick, you were. What do you remember about this quake?
Well, I had just come home from school, and the one memory that I have is when I started hearing about the freeway collapse, thinking that my father was commuting home from work and that my father had been crushed. Years later, I realized that that's not even the route he takes home, so he was never in any danger at all. But, you know, you have those few seconds of sheer panic where you're really trying to figure out which way is up after a disaster.
And there's been a lot of talk in the last year, especially because of some recent earthquakes in California, about whether the state and the Bay Area are ready for the next big one. Kat, you've been reporting on this. First, what's the thinking about when that might happen? Because it has been a while.
Yes, well, it has. It's been 100 years since a really big one, since the 1906 earthquake, so more than 100 years. And geologists say that actually right now the tectonic plates between the Northern America and the Pacific Ocean have been moving and moving and moving for all of this time, and stress is built up on seven Bay Area quakes, fault lines. So there could actually be a very serious earthquake on any one of those before we finish this conversation, or on any one of those over the next any number of years. There could be more than one earthquake. There could be one. It's very uncertain. And one of the scenarios that we're looking at is the possibility of serious earthquakes, maybe not just one big one, but serious ones that might be every 10 years or 15 years or something like that, because all the faults are ready to fail.
And how ready is the city of San Francisco, Patrick?
Well, I think we've made many strides to get more prepared. In the same way that, you know, the Giants lost the series, unfortunately, in 1989, I have much higher hopes for them now because I think they are much better prepared. San Francisco certainly can't declare victory on these types of things, but we've made amazing strides since Loma Prieta. So we are hedging our bets and we are in much better shape than we were 25 years ago.
And where are you still needing to improve?
Well, I think what we need to do is there's certainly not a magic wand that you just wave over the city and suddenly you're seismically safe. I constantly talk about my two young children and how when I try to get them to clean their rooms, I have to do it piece by piece. I have to have them start with their dirty laundry, start with their Legos. And that's really how we approach seismic risk in San Francisco. We started with our unreinforced masonry buildings 20 years ago. Now we're retrofitting our city's soft story buildings that house about 15% of our population. We're also looking at evaluating our city's private schools. So depending on the construction type and the occupancy, you have to look at those risks and figure out what the appropriate intervention is.
You mentioned private schools because private schools do not have to meet the state's seismic standards, right?
Correct. Starting in the 1930s, we started treating our public schools and private schools differently. Doesn't mean that private schools are unsafe, but it largely means that they've been held to very different standards. So locally in San Francisco here, we just passed an ordinance that's going to require that all these schools be evaluated for their seismic risk over the next 3 years. We're the first jurisdiction to do that in the state, and we've worked very closely with the school community to make sure that we're not being overzealous here and that we're doing a responsible approach to public policy that gives them the tools they need to make informed decisions about their risks.
We're speaking with Patrick Ottolini, Chief Resilience Officer and Director of the Earthquake Safety Implementation Program for the City and County of San Francisco, and Kat Snow from KQED. You're listening to Here and Now. And Kat, as you looked at what was there now, 25 years later, did you find that the city was ready for the next big one?
Well, I looked more at the whole Bay Area rather than the city itself. And yes, in many ways, it is on really big things. Like, for example, the Bay Bridge collapse. The upper deck, you know, fell onto the lower deck. As you mentioned in the beginning, there was a freeway on the east side that just collapsed the whole long length of it,
yeah.
Huge long length of it. So those kinds of things have been done. The Bay Bridge retrofit took 24 years, but it finished. And the freeways have been done, and all of the overpasses have been done. I mean, the freeway overpasses have been done. But then you come down to smaller things, like we're built right along a bay, right? So there's sandy shores, and there's highways along those shores. And those roads are still living, or those roads are still going on soils that could liquefy. Mm. So there's a lot of roadways that could still become impassable. But what people hope is that there's been enough work done that nobody will, you know, be killed by a bridge or an overpass falling down, that should have been finished. And I mean, that's been done, and it should be done to a standard that would hold.
Well, what about the Golden Gate Bridge, Patrick? Has that been retrofitted?
The Golden Gate Bridge has not been retrofitted. It also didn't see damage after 1989. That style of suspension bridge, and actually as a point of context, my great-grandfather actually worked on that project. And so to see it withstand the earthquakes, obviously it's a very impressive structure. It is old technology, but it works very well.
How do you get private businesses or people to go back and retrofit their buildings? There's a lot of old architecture in San Francisco. I'm wondering how difficult it is to convince people to spend the money.
It's a very complicated public policy process. What you want to be able to do is balance out the needs to have a safe building, but also understand that to get that building safe, that takes real money and real dollars, and those have to come from somewhere. So you have to balance out the needs of not only the folks paying for it, but in the case of, say, our soft story buildings, you also have to respect the needs of the folks that are living in these buildings. These people deserve to live in safe buildings that are going to be there after an earthquake.
One more thing I want to ask you about, Patrick, and that is, if you think back to 25 years ago and we had the famous scene at Candlestick Park, that is a building that chances are an earthquake will not happen when it's filled with people, because there are so few hours of the year that a baseball stadium is going to be filled with people. Does that figure in to how up to code a building has to be, or to what standard it has to meet?
It absolutely plays a role. In many ways, when we do seismic mitigation, it is somewhat of a calculated risk. We're figuring out, obviously, to spend the right amount of money. You obviously don't want to overspend when you're on a building that you know may not need it. But you also want to have the right interventions to make sure that the however that building's used, whatever the occupancy is, that those occupants are safe.
Patrick Ottolini, Chief Resilience Officer and Director of the Earthquake Safety Implementation Program for the City and County of San Francisco. We've also been speaking with Kat Snow, Science Editor for KQED, part of the Here and Now Contributors Network, 25 years to the day after the Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.